On November 2, 1917, Arthur James Balfour, then Foreign Secretary of the United Kingdom, wrote a letter to Lord Rothschild, the former MP and well-regarded zoologist, who was also active in the budding Zionist movement. After the standard formalities and a brief preamble, Balfour wrote to Rothschild what would become arguably the 67 most significant and contentious words in the modern history of the Middle East. They were these. His Majesty's government view with favour the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavours to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. This paragraph became known as the Balfour Declaration. As has been the case with pretty much everything written about the Middle East ever since, all interested parties have read into it an affirmation of their own particular prejudices and beliefs. Many Israelis regard the Balfour Declaration as a founding document, albeit 31 years before the event, of their country. Many Palestinians regard the Balfour Declaration as merely the first in a long sequence of 20th century betrayals, their land being promised as they saw it and see it by one imperial occupier to another. As is very frequently, and frequently vexingly, the case where the Middle East is concerned, everyone has kind of a point. This much was immortally acknowledged by Colonel Ronald Storrs, the British officer who was named Governor of Jerusalem shortly after Balfour sent his letter to Rothschild.
"I am not holy for either, but for both."
Storrs later grumbled about the Jews and Arabs of Palestine.
2 hours of Arab grievances drive me into the synagogue, while after an intensive course of Zionist propaganda, I'm prepared to embrace Islam.
In making the Balfour Declaration, Britain was also acting in what it perceived as its own interests, as it began thinking about what a post-First World War world might look like. Balfour, a careful diplomat who weighed each of those 67 words carefully, did not use the word state, still less any inflammatory terms like freedom or independence. It seems rather likelier that Britain envisaged an amenable Middle Eastern protectorate, serving as part of a bridge between its possessions in Egypt and India. But it nevertheless meant that a major power, indeed in 1917 the major power, had endorsed the idea of a Jewish homeland, a huge boost to the Zionist project. That was, however, about all the United Kingdom did. Subsequent British governments were at best indifferent to the idea of a Jewish state. By 1939, indeed, a British government white paper announced,
"His Majesty's government now declare unequivocally that it is not part of their policy that Palestine should become a Jewish state."
It took the monstrosities of the Second World War to make Israel a moral imperative, and Israel's 1947-49 War of Independence to make Israel a reality. When the UN General Assembly endorsed Resolution 181 in 1947, partitioning Palestine between Arab and Jewish states, Britain abstained. The centenary celebrations of the Balfour Declaration as an act of British midwifery to Israel's birth, which are to include a ceremonial meeting of the two countries' current prime ministers, necessitate much willful forgetting on both sides.
We are proud of the role that we played in the creation of the State of Israel, and we will certainly mark the centenary with pride.
No such amnesia is ever likely to be extended to Balfour's original text, however. Like no other conflict, the one between Israel and Palestine has been fought in the theatre of international opinion. For Israel, the Balfour Declaration is an underpinning of its legitimacy on the world stage. For Palestine, it is the original proof in writing of betrayal by foreign powers. And for both, it permits the belief, strangely comforting, that the region's troubles were all caused by outside actors and must therefore be solved by them, rather than by the people who were neighbours long before Balfour declared anything. For Monocle in London, I'm Andrew Muller.